drive down nearly any American street or highway, and it's likely that a fair number of the cars that you pass along the way will be Hondas. Surprisingly, it took a long time for the Japanese startup to capture a share of the international auto market. In his book, Driving Honda, Inside the World's Most Innovative Car Company, Jeffrey Rothfeder explains the company's success. It is published by Portfolio Penguin, and I'm very pleased to welcome Jeffrey Rothfeder to our show today. Hello.
Thank you.
What allowed Honda and other Japanese car companies to gain a foothold in the United States in the 70s? Americans almost only bought American cars at that point.
Yeah, definitely. Well, a few things happened. First of all, of course, the oil shortage when the Gulf states stopped supplying us with oil, for one thing. But there was also another sort of side story. The Clean Air Act of 1974 set very high standards for the amount of pollution that cars can give out. And all the automakers, including Toyota, frankly, said they couldn't meet those standards, told the U.S. government they couldn't. And Honda, which was the last of the auto companies to actually start up, decided they were going to do it because Honda's a great engineering company. And in 2 years, they created the engine for the first Civic car, they called the CVCC engine, that actually met the clean air standards.
But a lot of Americans didn't seem to care whether their cars were gas guzzlers or not because gas prices were still fairly low.
Yeah.
There had to be something else that was going on. Did the word just go out that Honda was making a better car?
Well, I think that was the other thing. I mean, that was the real tipping point for the quality of cars, because I think Americans had accepted the fact that cars were going to break down on the road all the time and that you were always going to get stuck because they were overheating. And suddenly Honda, first of all, met the clean air standards, were cheaper than a lot of the American cars, and didn't break down very often.
How did Honda get past that that feeling after World War II that made in Japan meant low quality?
Yeah, that was a big deal. And in fact, you know, when Honda and Toyota, for that matter, first came here in the 70s, I mean, there was a lot of xenophobia, and many people wouldn't buy their cars. And it wasn't that far after World War II, for that matter. But I do think that in the end, you know, when you look at market economies, quality always does win out, and people end up wanting to buy things that work.
Was there a concerted effort by Japanese manufacturers to overcome that image?
They did to an extent. I mean, Honda is a very quiet company. And in fact, the fact that I was even able to write this book is something pretty amazing, because they don't usually let people in and see what's going on. So Honda basically just did it by making really good cars at that point.
Well, what does that mean? Easy to repair? Were they safer? Just got good gas mileage?
Well, the gas mileage was a big deal, because if you remember, you know, when the oil prices did go up in the 70s and people had to get online to get gas and all that, it was pretty much a shock to the system, to the economy. So that I think helped quite a bit.
The company was founded in 1949 originally as a motorcycle company. And it wasn't long after the end of World War II when the Japanese economy was still in shambles. What was Soichiro Honda's background? Did he start making motorcycles?
He's such an interesting character, and he really imbues the whole book, because his DNA is all over that company still. So he was an engineer, never graduated college, so famously believed that college didn't teach you anything, you had to really learn firsthand. And so after the war, he really didn't have anything to do at that point. There was no business. As you say, the economy was in shambles. And so he took a lot of the old bicycles and just put old engines on. In fact, engines that were in radios that the Americans had left behind, and turned them into the first motorcycles in Japan. And considering the condition of the roads and the economy, people really, really prized them.
Well, they were an inexpensive way to travel at a time when Japan was really struggling.
Right, exactly.
You say he was the least likely Japanese industrial giant of his generation. What was different about him?
Well, you know, again, first of all, the fact that he really believed in engineering, for one thing, and that's a very big difference. You know, the fact that that he that he sort of changed the way that people look at engineering, because Toyota was much more of a marketing type company. They put out good cars and they sort of told people why they want to buy them. And Honda has always stood behind their engineering, and so he was an interesting character, that he was profane on one hand and very very innovative on the other.
As I remember it, when Toyotas came on the scene, they were seen as competition to the Volkswagen Beetle, mm-hmm. But not Honda's. When did the company build its first car?
Well, Honda didn't build its first car until 1963, so it was the last.
So that's pretty
really
late.
Yeah, and in fact, the Japanese Ministry of Industry did not even want Honda to build a car. They didn't want any more international cars besides Toyotas and Nissans. So they were very late coming in. And everything they did, again, they did very quietly, just moved in. But ultimately, their quality won out, I think.
You write that Honda has a self-consciously decentralized structure. Mm-hmm. Why has the company pursued that approach?
Yeah, and that's key reason why I wrote the book, because, you know, many multinational companies trying to globalize, trying to sell all over the world, really are struggling. They don't want to talk about that much, but most aren't very profitable. And so Honda's approach, unlike a lot of the centralized approaches where like Toyota is really controlled by the Japanese part of the company, Honda decided that they were going to, wherever they go in the United States, in China, in Brazil, Thailand, wherever, they were going to localize. They were going to be a local company wherever they go. And that's a unique business model that they've been able to achieve.
Are they just making cars and motorcycles?
They make everything. First of all, they make more engines than any company in the world. And so they
make engines for other cars.
They make engines for other cars, and they also make, of course, power equipment like tillers and lawnmowers. But they're also now making airplanes, and they're making robots.
And you say that the company's manufacturing methods have been revolutionary. What do they do differently?
Yeah, and this is really the amazing
thing. They don't have the assembly line a la Henry Ford?
Not the typical assembly line at all. I mean, the one major thing about their so-called flexible factory, and you see it when you go there, go to any of their factories, is that they will make different cars one after the other on the assembly line, whereas other companies will only be able to make the same car one after the other. And they can switch from one car to the other in 5 or 10 minutes, where companies can take actually months to do that.
My guest is Jeffrey Rothfeder, the former editor-in-chief at International Business Times. He's written a book called Driving Honda, Inside the World's Most Innovative Car Company. Back in 2007, Honda received criticism for some of its unusual hiring practices. The Wall Street Journal reported that when Honda opened a plant in Southeast Indiana, it announced that only people living in 20 of the state's 92 counties could apply for jobs.
Yeah, well, you know, all of the so-called transplant companies, that is foreign companies doing business here in the auto industry, they don't want to unionize.
Do they unionize in Japan?
No, they don't. But although, there is stricter labor laws in terms of lifetime employment and all of that. But it is important to note that Honda and Toyota, for that matter, you know, they pay the same wages that union wages are. They give the same benefits, and nobody gets fired from those companies.
But the reason they excluded those other counties was that people who already had worked on automobiles in union jobs mm-hmm. were likely to live there. Wasn't there an advantage of hiring those people because they were experienced making cars?
Well, you know, I spend a whole chapter in the book on Honda's uniqueness in the way they deal with employee hiring. And one of the things that they want really are people with a blank slate, people that haven't been taught by some other auto company how to make cars, because Honda has such a unique way of doing that.
So they justify what they're doing also by saying we pay the same as everybody else, and the workers are happy to not have a union?
You know, they've tried to unionize in their plants, or the unions have come in, and in most cases they get voted down. When they're in their Alabama plant, for example, when there were tornadoes in the area and companies had to close down completely, Honda laid nobody off, and that was their rule, you know, that they don't lay people off.
You say that the company has the ability to indulge paradox. Mm-hmm. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, and that's really interesting because, you know, in most companies, they'll give lip service to, we want people to speak their mind and then we'll build a consensus. But really, they're run by the bosses, ultimately, by their leadership. Honda really tells everybody to speak their mind and breaks down the barriers and does this very, very well, breaks down the barriers of who's supervisor, who's not. And they expect everybody from the lowest worker to the highest to participate in these conversations.
Most of management actually comes from the engineering department.
Yeah.
So is that their main concern, to focus on engineering? I remember when General Motors created its Saturn division, it kind of suggested that it would take a Honda part, come up with an American equivalent.
Yeah.
Well, Saturn no longer is in business. Right. Why didn't they get it right?
Well, because if you don't have the entire business model, you just can't cherry pick different things that Honda does well. And that's what makes the company so interesting. And one of the things is the fact that every leader of Honda, as you just pointed out, has been an engineer and an R&D person. And no other company can say that, because most companies hire from marketing or sales.
Maybe Saturn should have picked up on the idea of the three joys.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Honda really believes that there should be a joy in manufacturing, there should be a joy in selling, and a joy in buying. And so they really prize individualism in that way.
Although I hate their commercials.
Well, yeah, but they're odd.
When you write that when they were introduced in 1951, the three joys there were explicitly offered as a set of commandments.
Mm-hmm.
Have they evolved over the time?
Well, they have, to the extent that the real joy at Honda that they like to talk about now is the joy of mobility. And they want individuals working there to feel mobile, and they want buyers to feel the joy of mobility when they buy their cars.
One of the things we learned about General Motors was that innovation was actually squelched, mm-hmm, because it often meant that it would cost more money. Honda encourages innovation?
Yeah, they do. And in fact, Soichiro Honda, one of his rules was that, we need to make mistakes, that 99% of great innovation comes from mistakes that you made before. And they really encourage people to go out and do it. Honda, one point I do want to make that's important about this is that Honda, is not the number one car manufacturer in the world. Obviously, they're number five, but they've got the highest profit margins of any car manufacturer. And so they're willing to just make good cars and just sell the number they can sell.
On the other hand, Toyota's Prius has been a huge hit, and Honda took a while to develop its own hybrid.
Yeah, interestingly enough, they actually developed the first hybrid. They just didn't get it to market. They got a few of them to market, but not as fast as the Prius did. As I said, Toyota's a great marketing company, and they're able to do that. Honda's really banking on fuel cell, hydrogen-powered fuel cell cars. That's sort of where they think the future's going.
Have they invested in electric cars?
They have, and they've got, actually this year, they've got two or three new electric engines. The whole auto industry is really trying to figure out what comes next, and everybody sort of is hedging their bets at this point.
Acura is a Honda subsidiary. What have they done there that's different from the Honda line?
Well, they're a higher-end car, essentially.
So this is simply the equivalent of the Buick or the Cadillac of Honda?
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
But are they engineered pretty much in the same way?
Yeah, they are. And so one of the things that we've learned is that there are more Hondas on the road if you look at the past 25 years than any other car, because they last, and the Acuras fit in the same category.
Honda also, cars tend to get great mileage. Mm-hmm. What are they doing that other car companies don't do?
Well, again, from the very first engine that they made for cars, when they met the pollution standards in the 70s, they realized that the way you do that, one of the ways, of course, is by getting better gas mileage, so you're not using as much gas. And so they're really focused on environmental issues. I mean, if you look at the Honda Jet, for example, that I mentioned before, I mean their jet is the most fuel-efficient jet of any small jet in the world. So they really believe in not having a big footprint.
How big are they in the airline industry?
Well, they just started. Their jet has just been approved for FAA by the FAA, but they've sold a lot of pre-sales already.
And it's all in the motor, because what Boeing tends to do is make the plane lighter in other ways, so that it doesn't need as powerful a motor.
Yeah, Honda has used both the aerodynamic design and the motor to make the difference in their engines, and everybody that's ridden on them or that's use them feels that they're revolutionary.
You talked about the independence of the subsidiaries, but in 2011, didn't Honda have to shut down 50% of its U.S. operations because of the tsunami?
Well, they shut down the operations because one part, they were missing one part that they were still making in Japan, which they now don't make there anymore.
Are global production chains a problem for them?
Well, you know, it is for every company that's a multinational, as I said. And so, you know, they feel they've learned from that one. That certainly was a hiccup of theirs, but everybody went through the same thing. But it's important to note again that they didn't fire anybody during that time.
Why has Toyota continued to dominate? It had that real problem with the recalls and a scandal that developed as a result. Honda hasn't had anything like that. Is it just that Toyota markets better?
That's what everybody in the auto industry feels when you talk to people. And again, Honda doesn't. The reason why Toyota failed is because they wanted to be number one, and Honda knows that that's a mistake to bring that kind of vanity to car manufacturing.
You became interested in Honda for what reason? Do you own a Honda?
I do own a Honda, but that's not why I became interested. The main reason is I wanted to find a company that really is doing globalization right.
And you're calling them the most innovative car company? Are they really?
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. I mean, they are the engineering genius in the auto industry.
Does everybody imitate them, except for Saturn, which did a lousy job of doing
that? Well, everybody tries to imitate them, and people come and try to see how they're working.
Jeffrey Rothfeder's book, Driving Honda Inside the World's Most Innovative Car Company, is published by Portfolio Penguin. Thank you so much for being on our show today.
Thank you.